Hello, you're listening to Third Waves.
Third is a platform that amplifies underrepresented voices through print, events, and on the airwaves. You're joined by me, Tribe, DJ, and radio host.
Me, Daniela, writer, musician, and producer.
And myself, Rona, stylist, founder, and editor-in-chief of Third.
This is with my Niger sisters. Welcome back. If you're tuning in for the first time, we recommend you checking out the other episodes too. But you can also just dive in here with us.
On this episode, Chloe, Tribe, Palumi, and Rona talk about Niger icons of the past and present who have waved the flag high for Nigeria.
Welcome to With My Niger Sisters. This series is about the experiences of Nigerian women and non-binary people. I really wanted to do this show just because I think Nigerian culture at the moment is popping off. And it's good as Nigerians and people from the diaspora to have the space to unpack this and to talk about it. And also, I just know so many awesome Nigerian women. So why not chat about it? So this episode is around Niger icons, and one of the things I'd love for us to be able to do would be to create an A-list of people who we think are basically smashing it when it comes to Nigerian culture. These could be people from the past or the present. But first off, can I ask my guests to reintroduce themselves?
Hello, hello. My name is Palumi Nubi. I am Nigerian, Yoruba, and I was born in Lagos, Nigeria, but grew up in London. I currently travel the world and document my experiences.
Hi, I'm Chloe Falani. I'm a poet, artist, workshop facilitator, part-time model. I'll say something interesting about me. I was in Beyonce's Bouncing Girls video.
Oh, yeah.
My ethnicities are Yoruba and Ishan, Edo State area. So like Benny tribe, but like offshoot. There's a lot of politics in Nigeria, which makes tribes really interesting. But yeah, that's me.
Hi, I am Tribe. I am a DJ and radio host, presenter / producer. And I am also Nigerian, conveniently, from Yoruba as well.
I'm Rona, I'm the founder of Third and also a stylist. I'm Igbo Nigerian, and I'm going to get this conversation started. So maybe just to kickstart, I wanted to ask you all if you had to choose Supermalt or Fanta, which one are you going for?
Nigerian Fanta, you have to be specific.
Nigerian Fanta, that's true. That is true. There is a difference.
It has to be in the bottle, yeah. In the glass bottle, not the plastic bottle. Yeah. Oh, but I have a thing with malt. That's hard. Fanta. I'll go Fanta. Yeah.
I will also say Nigerian Fanta because when I was 11, we went there and I think that was the first time I ever saw the grape one, which also is kind of like great for flushing out your system, but tastes amazing. The sugar content, I don't know what it is, but it's insane. So yeah, Nigerian Fanta.
I would say Supermalt holds a special place in my heart. Like, it doesn't compare. But I would say recently I have been dabbling in the Nigerian Fanta, and I can see the appeal. I do occasionally buy it, but it doesn't come close to me.
The malt.
Like, Supermalt is the standard.
You have to preserve it at least. If we go for that'll be the end of Fanta. Like, please keep the malt, please.
100%. If there's malt going, then I'll take it. It's cool.
I really actually want to be able to say Supermalt, but in reality, Supermalt's so heavy.
It's
a meal.
And I find that I have one and I have like a third of it. And I'm just like,
as a kid,
I'm done. And I don't want any more. So it's Fanta. I'll take the sugar, you know.
Cold one.
I've like got an interesting fact about that. Apparently Supermalt was made during the, I believe it's the Civil War, the Biafra War. And it was to keep the soldiers get their nutrients. So, you know, the vitamin B's and stuff like that. So it was specifically created.
Like a medicinal.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Exactly.
Yeah,
and
it's a whole meal.
Took off. It is a whole meal. And it's like, it's good to get your energy when you need it. But it is heavy. I definitely went through a phase where I did too much. I had to take a few years away from it. but
you're back.
Yeah, I'm back with a vengeance as well. Like, I haven't learned my lesson.
Okay, so our Nigerian A-list, who's going on it? Who do we love? Yeah, who's been an influence to us in our lives and why, I guess. I'm okay to kickstart what you guys are thinking. I'd say Fela Kuti. His music, I remember, I feel like I discovered Fela Kuti's music in a really thorough way when I was in university, which sounds a bit strange because you just imagine I'd have him playing in the house, but my parents were more into like gospel or like Bob Marley and other things. So I studied in Manchester, and I think in Manchester, that was the first time I was like, okay, people in England are kind of a bit different. Even though it's a city, I think like being black was just like an interesting thing. But the one thing that Manchester did really, really well was music. And there were so many nights where you go out and like you'd hear just old school Afrobeat, but specifically Fela Kuti. And I was just listening to him a lot during that time. And I think going into his music and understanding a bit more about the songs, like it made me feel quite proud to think a lot of them were quite political and they meant stuff. So it wasn't only like this like rebellious sound and like, you know, the trumpets and all of that. It was also like, you know, uplifting, liberating messaging. I've actually got a book of his, because obviously, you know, you guys know I love to read, on my desk drawer. I haven't read it though, because I'm a tiny bit scared. I do know he had like God knows how many wives. So I'm, you know, a bit frightened about what I might find out when I read that. But I do think in general, what I know about Fela Kuti, like he's a solid, he'd go up there solidly.
Yeah. I think off the bat of that, literature-wise, Chiamaka, like she, from, you know, a very young age, I remember just ingesting her books and how raw her emotions are and how she just kind of portrayed this lifestyle from, you know, migrant world to actually living there, the way she incorporates histories into her writing and everything. And I just, eloquently she speaks, especially I love just listening to her on like podiums and stuff like that, and she doesn't care who you are. Like, she would tell you the way it is. I remember interviewing and asking a really dumb question. She was like, honestly, this question is really dumb. Like, she doesn't like hold back. And I think the audacity and the audaciousness for young people to see that, women, black, you know, that definitely is someone I will put up there, 1,000%.
Yeah, would you recommend a book by Chip?
Yeah, I say Papa Hibiscus, start from there. That might be a deep one, actually. But it's one by my nightstand, so yeah.
It's amazing, isn't it? It's like, really good. It's like one I've reread, but also I feel like I discovered the Biafran War, like the history,
yes,
through half of Yellow Sun. So I completely agree with you. And also, I love the fact that she's such a feminist.
Yes,
like,
yes.
She's a Nigerian woman who has actually used that word and not been afraid to do it and been picked up by, obviously, Beyonce and stuff for doing that. So I love that for her. And I also love that for Nigerians, because I think Nigerian women are quite strong. I don't want to use the word strong as in, like, we've got all this strength. But, you know, we are level-headed. We know how to speak our minds, but sometimes I feel like we shy away from this label of feminist. And I think the fact that she did it for me just was like, it was a connection. It was like, oh, I know what you're saying.
And the right way of defining feminism, I think that's what's really attractive about her. I think that word has become quite dirty in terms of people just, you know, losing the essence of it. It's about, you know, fairness. So she really does put the word where it's meant to be. Like, look, we have a seat on the table. We have things to say. We are meant to be here, and we will build the whole damn table if you don't give us a seat. So yeah, I think she's definitely, our audacity is just next level. Yeah, she carries it well, really well.
Yeah.
I would go with Chinua Achebe for Things Fall Apart. That book for me was the moment of going, how did, what was the perspective, especially growing up in the UK, you just know, then the British came. You know, what was the perspective of an average man with all toxicities and complexities in a village experiencing Europeans for the first time, and how did that collide with his cultural worldview and perspective of himself? So just being able to articulate that in a way that's relatable, and to finally kind of smash your own perspective and narrative, and also give a voice and perspective to that for Nigerians all over. I don't think those conversations were being had at the time that the book was released. So I think that was in itself quite a revolutionary act to do.
Yeah.
So I'll say Akwesi Amezi, only because their writing is amazing. They talk about like spirituality, the sort of the duality as well of like being Nigerian. Like I've always learned about in our culture, especially in Yoruba, naming children. Children were really never named in a sort of gendered way. There was always like naming in a way of like just energy and connection to like spirits and power, and like family. And I think in their writing, they always hold that sort of like grounding. And I feel that grounding is also something that's more like pre-colonial sort of like ideas of what it means to be Nigerian. But yeah, I love their writing. Also, they deal with such like, I guess, intense sort of like world-shifting, life-shifting moments, but like in a way that actually like sort of makes you see yourself and see their own journey and how you can move through your own journey in life.
And I think rereading this literature, I think you pointed that out, is very important, because sometimes we read this stuff when we're quite young. I'm not thinking, when did I actually read this book? I think we're quite young. I think rereading them in a more mature setting where we are more aware of, you know, environment, definitely reaffirms why we love these names and these people that we've mentioned. But yeah.
I will also wanted to add on to what you're saying about Fela Kuti and say his mom as well, Fumilayo. Fumilayo Kuti, because she was an inspiration to him. But what you were talking about women in society, she was quite a, what do you call it, a protester as well. She kind of encouraged women to go back to wearing traditional clothing and not necessarily indulge in this idea of we got to look Western. But then also she also had partook in protests in the market as well, and she influenced and inspired a lot of Fela's worldview. It's a bit like I guess the connection with Tupac and his mom.
That's what I was thinking.
It's a bit like that, and that's why Fela contributed to who he became. So I'd also want to shout out her as well.
Is she the first woman to drive in Nigeria?
I think she was. Wow.
I think she was the first woman. She was that history, the first woman to drive. Yeah, I think it's pretty powerful.
And who do we think is kind of underrated, but people should, like, you know, keep their eyes on or dig out?
Nike. So when I went to Nigeria in the summer, I was actually researching years ago and I saw Nike's gallery.
Oh, Nike at the gallery. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And I was like, oh, who's that? Oh, Nike? And then I went there finally. And it was amazing that she was there when I went to the gallery. And she was so profound. She's like a globally recognized artist, but, you know, had toured like the UK, has had articles done on her. And, you know, she's been around for decades. Her way that she uses art to convey what it is to be a Nigerian and how, you know, to even environmentally, how we can use everyday, let's say, common plastic and create this into something usable. And her mentality is in terms of exhibiting other Nigerian artists. It is just amazing. And her knowledge on, you know, traditional styles of printing and things like that. I would just want to highlight her. And she was just so inspirational for that moment that I was in her presence, but also recognizing how, you know, much she's done in her career.
I think that space can definitely be expanded on. There's a lot of art in one building. I think it needs a whole expansion of it to actually appreciate it, because they're almost stacked on each other, though they have almost forced it.
It needs a bigger space. It needs a bigger 100%. Space.
Interestingly, what about like people who are like Nigerian British? Because I think sometimes, you know, even when I think about Nigerians, I usually focus a lot on Nigerians from Nigeria.
Yeah.
But obviously, Nigerian British people or Nigerian Americans, we're all part of the diaspora. Do you know what I mean?
What's the name of that footballer? Black guy.
For Arsenal.
Was it Arsenal?
Sorry.
Sorry, I'm really bad with people's name. I probably should have. It does. It's guys, help me out here. Black young guy.
I think
it was the World Cup. Like missed the goal, and there was a lot of pressure on him to shoot this one goal.
Saka
is Nigerian, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's that kind of person. I'll say it's so interesting when he's doing well. Is a British guy, yeah. And when it was the other way, I think that kind of showed for that World Cup is like, they're like, oh, you know, the Nigerian guy. It's like, oh, nice Nigerian.
Mm. Yeah, truly.
So yeah, but big up to him anyway. So yeah. I think he's doing great stuff in his career, at least the little I've seen.
I would say they're not like small, but Little Sims.
I
love their, it's so funny because I actually met them so long ago early in the career at Shoreditch House when my friends had a membership because they were in the band. It was like maybe 5-6 years ago, and I remember they were like, oh, you're so cool, and I was like, thank you, and then like we never spoke again. But then I've seen them
cultivated that one.
And they were like really bubbly and lively, and I saw them now recently just through another friend, and they're like a lot more reserved, and I could imagine like the years of being in like celebrity and like building your career, and I think it's so bold of them that they are like also like an independent artist. I know there's like some things that come with that, but like I think they just constantly have this really raw and authentic sound and really stick to like essentially like their roots of who they are as an artist. Like I still remember the sound when they were like early beginning, and they still, it's not that they sound the same, they're definitely evolved, but they're still like the same diamond. You know how they say the diamond in the rough? Mm-hmm. Like I feel sometimes that diamond in the rough thing is like some people, they go from a diamond to literally like nothing, to just like a like piece of metal holding the diamond, and the diamond's gone. Well, I feel like Little Sims is like actually like a refined diamond, and it's still maintaining who they are.
Mm. I would like to add to with Little Sims, I feel like she has been able to really embody who she is and not necessarily feel like she has to change. Mm-hmm. So like, you see it so much, especially in the 90s and noughties, when a black female artist will come out, let's think Alexandra Burke or something, Beverly Knight, and you'd see them having to kind of pivot how they would present themselves and, you know, sound and look to, I don't know, be palatable, as we said before, to the wider audience. And I feel like Little Sims has been able to cultivate an audience who accepts her for her, and grow at a pace that is reasonable, you know, with that sound, and keep that pace of growing. I would point to the song Point and Kill, which was a good example of her being able to embody what it is to be, you know, British, having grown up British and being Nigerian, and blending that in with the different sounds as well. So Little Sims is a great example. I would also say John Boyega as well. I DJ'd for one of his like murals in Peckham. I think it was like Peckham Theatre, and he was absolutely lovely, and it was just about the culture, and it was about, you know, what it means to have grown up in the UK, in London, in Peckham, as a black Nigerian, and he often brings in that culture. When you see him in interviews, he often brings in what it means to be a British Nigerian, and you can see him, like, channeling that. I don't know if anyone watched Woman King, you know, when he was playing the,
I think that's him on it on the regular.
100%. Really, he was leaning into his uncle vibes.
Big uncle. He's very British. So when he was doing that, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, but he was like channeling the uncle. I completely respect that. It's watching people embodying all the cultural influences as a British and as a Nigerian person, and kind of showing you what that can look like on the stage. Yeah,
he's also not afraid to show up on a red carpet in a Shebby or like, do you know what I mean? Yes. Like, he really represents it. So I agree there. So this question is slightly skewed from the whole icon vibe, but like, what behaviors would we describe as almost like iconic to Nigerians?
Loud.
Boastful.
Yeah, super
boastful.
You know who I am.
Yeah, exactly.
100%. Do you ever notice, like, on buses, when there's someone loud on the bus and you turn around, it's an auntie or uncle straight away, just like,
earphones are made. Come on.
I've got to be honest. I do think Evo people are quite quiet. Because my mum would always be like, do you know what I mean? So I do think Evos are quite
young. I think Nigerians are very...
We're going to get specific.
But I guess that's the reality of the ethnic groups, isn't it? Like, you know, there's a contention of, you know, what does it mean to be Nigerian when it's like made by the British kind of thing. So it's like, you think about what was Yoruba land before that.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a definitely like a... boastful and prideness. And I think that also comes quite authentically of like our history of like how we were about our families and the communities. It's like, this is what we've done and built. So kind of take that on. I think because of obviously capitalism, it kind of shifts, but I still think there's a maintenance of that. Like even my mother, I think initially she was like, oh, I need you to be like a doctor, lawyer. But then,
or a disappointment. Those are literally options.
That part. I've actually heard someone say, if you've got Nigerian parents, start disappointing them when you're young.
So they can get
But the boastfulness came with like something that she didn't sort of see as the most like amazing, but once she actually saw it as a thing, which was me being in the Beyonce video, and she was able to be like, oh, look at, tell all her friends and be like, oh, my daughter's on, look, go on Disney Plus, go on Disney Plus.
You know? You don't have Disney Plus.
And I think even though it's not like the big lawyer, it's still got this energy of boastfulness that she can have.
She can have
and
something.
And like maintain this like pride of Nigerianness, which they love. They're like,
So you're the what's up starter for what's up. It's what's up.
The what's up. Hey,
the what's up.
So true. I would say that Nigerians can be quite, I wouldn't say blunt, honest, but sometimes we package it in jest. And I've come to appreciate that, especially in contrast to, I think, the British culture, which can sometimes be slightly reserved with how we think and feel about people and things and our surroundings. So when I am in certain circles and I know that a person who's Nigerian might say something to me, and it might be a bit like a cold truth, but in a way that's still like you're laughing about it, you know, look at your head or whatever, you know what I mean? Just like, you know, how can you come in like that, you know, whatever, like, and you can still, you know, laugh about it and take in the hard truths. And yeah, I fully appreciate that, and I feel like that's such a Nigerian thing.
I think definitely just the honesty, like we really give it to you the way it is. And also like you said, like wrapping stuff up in like funny situation. People that live in Nigeria, sometimes they're like, that's how they survive, like things can get so hard. Just gotta give yourself a bit of joy, like find something funny. And that's why people lean into entertainment and Nollywood and music and stuff, because it just gives them that escapism a little bit as well. And we are all about Oambe. Like on the weekends we like to have a good time, there's always a party, there's always somewhere to turn up. So yeah, I think that definitely puts Nigeria in
I'd also say that it's like we practice joy very well.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah.
But we also hustle hard.
We hustle hard.
That was the one thing I really think of when I think of Nigeria.
Academia.
And like, grind.
Yeah, true.
And I think it's definitely a pro, because I think, you know, even when you consider like the success of Nigerians now, I think a lot of that has come from grind. Like if you listen to the lyrics of any top artist, Wizkid, you know, Burna Boy, they've got a song where it's about the hustle. But at the same time, sometimes it's good to rest. You know, so we have to learn rest as well.
Yeah. I think it's where like migrant parents and stuff coming to this country, they really had to put in the work just and you understand where they want you to have that comfortable lifestyle. Hence the reason why they lean more to the conventional careers and roles, because that's kind of what they've seen and what they know safe.
Yeah.
They're all about the safety net. They don't understand this whole social media, this whole, oh my God, where's your income? Yeah. How are you surviving? Yeah. And I tell them like, mom, as long as I'm not coming to you to beg for money, all is well. Don't worry about me. So yeah, I think definitely we work very, very hard. And yeah, I remember a memory of mine. I went to Nigeria for 1 year. during my high school years. And when I came back, we were like, don't ask her. She just came back from Nigeria. She knows the answer. Like, that was literally like, this is like, they pop knowledge into my brain. But yeah, it's just definitely, we hustle hard, 100%.
And then finally, what would our hope be for Nigeria or Nigerians?
I have a lot.
Yeah.
As a traveler, we are not rated at all. That green card, that green passport is looked upon, discriminated upon. I have traveled as one that has a Nigerian parent. Now I have the privilege of having a British passport too as well. And the travel experience is so different. Like, you know, I've traveled with a friend that has a Nigerian passport and I'm just like, okay, yeah, welcome, bam, bam, bam. Her, where's your hotel? How much do you have in your account? Who's taking? I'm just like, we're literally going together. Why are they asking so many, you know? So there are some countries that we're not allowed into. I just came from Bali. As a British citizen, I paid $35. I went in. I was hosting a group of Nigerians. They paid $1,350 for the visa because they just didn't want to. So someone had to basically say they are, you know, liable for you or something like that. So yeah, so things within the travel space, I really hope that improves, that we are just having more global opportunities, we're able to explore more and just make our mark. We already do. We are hustle hard enough to get there because people still will go. But some people go, it takes extreme measures just to, you know, touch the greener pastures. But yeah, and just better in as a whole. But I'll let the...
For me, I hope, and this is not just for Nigeria, I'd say the whole of Africa, that we own our resources. I would say, for example, Turkish Airlines operating in Nigeria. I would love to see Nigerian Airlines going global. I would love to see us demanding more for our resources, such as oil. I would love to see, in terms of Nigerian cloth, not getting it from the Netherlands, but getting it from actually in Nigeria. And even the prints and the clothing, getting it from secondhand charity bulk. Have you seen those? Like, I remember going past a delivery and it was just crates of like kind of Western clothes that had been delivered and everyone was kind of queuing up to like sell it out, you know, and that just kills off like local garment making. So just removing that dependency on the Northern Hemisphere and creating and it's happening. It's not and I would love to see that continue and speed up with that transition, because I think we have the intelligence, we have the knowledge, the culture, the drive. I think is, and it's not just because Nigerians don't want to. There's a lot of things that are, you know, restraining us. But being able to kind of get together and being like, this is how we're gonna make our mark and kind of work around some of these issues. That's what I hope for Nigeria.
I'm gonna be somewhat political. Ooh. Black feminist. Ooh. Ideologies as well is big change of colonial ideology in Nigerian culture. I think a lot of Nigerian culture has taken up a lot of colonial British ideas as if it's always been there. It's been tradition. Don't come for me, but part of it religion wise, we weren't like, even a way so many Nigerians practice Christianity, it's like, you're so spiritual, you're so still connected to your spirituality that is more authentic to your ancestral line rather than like a sort of like sort of British English sort of like Christianity, which is not as like scared of this thing or that thing or like conscious of how this animal moves around. Like, I just see it so much. Even my mother, like, she's very Christian, but she's also so obviously like, I'm like, you're basically an Orisha priestess, but like, you know, you're not gonna go there. And then also just like real on when it comes to like LGBT people of Nigerian descent, like, I hate that the politics there is so similar to here, where it's like when the governments want to do some dodgy business with foreigners, they're going to now start talking about like LGBT issues. And one of my friends recently did a Vice News travel with Vice called Transnational. Sadly, Vice is going under, so I don't know if, I think the film is still up there. It's like a short documentary film and it go to interview like trans people in Nigeria. And the amount that they go through is just so much. And even myself, I haven't gone back. And for out of so many fears, I know some people who have gone, it's more when you're like passable or you've got all your other IDs and stuff. And I just think it's like, if we really want a like liberated Nigeria, we need to have every part of like Nigerian people together. Cause like, yeah, even when I look at Nigeria, it's like, there's so much queerness in our culture, but like it's, they try to like push it down and quiet it as if it's not there. Like Fela wearing makeup and being so like flamboyant, and just so many artists out there and like creatives, like they are embracing it, but then they obviously want to shut down the reality of people's sexualities or the abundance of sexualities or the abundance of genders. Like, again, talking about the names, it's like our names wasn't gendered. Now it is becoming more gendered because of still the West ideology and also the West gaze upon us. Like, it's, you know, when you talk about feminism, there's the male gaze, and the male gaze can operate even without the man there. And I think there's a white gaze, the white and European gaze can operate even without Europeans there. Nigerians are still very much like acting as if the Europeans are still watching them. How can you be more human? Because we were treated as animals. And so I want Nigerians to actually feel the freedom of absolute liberation of like, don't think about Europe, but actually think about yourselves and how you can be more loving and create, like, I want the diaspora of all Black and Nigerian people to be able to go back there without fear and also without the police brutality as well. Like, I don't want to keep going.
Like better leadership, you know.
Yes.
It starts from the head. If the head is corrupted, the whole body system cannot function. So I think better leaders, and it starts with people getting, you know, their PVC, their, you know, actually going and voting. I think since 2020 and, you know, since the movement, a lot of young people are getting to move to political and winning, at least, you know, within their neighborhoods and within their boroughs. And hopefully that would expand to the next election. But yeah,
I would say I feel like it might have to be something that works from the ground up.
Yeah.
The more conscious that people are
in yourself.
Exactly. Yeah. The more people are demanding more from the government and the people on top, that's when it's like, we can't get away with this bullshit no more. We've got to make change, or someone who has risen from the ground up is going like, I'm going to actually do things differently and cultivate the people to vote for me to do things differently.
Also, Nigerians need to let go of respectability politics so bad. Oh my God, we are so messy. We are not disrespectable. Oh my God. And amount of uncles that be married and have so many mistresses or trying to hit me up.
So true.
I need the respective police to end, because that's also like the internal mentality that allows everyone else to keep lying about what our reality is.
Yeah, I often think that when I, like, say, for example, I know you were talking about the ancestry stuff, right? So for me, I feel that a lot of that I've learned about, like, orishas and stuff, has come from places like Brazil, where it's like, you would think, because obviously they were sort of migrated there, that it would be diluted, and that when you bring up these words and these gods and, you know, these practices in Nigeria, it's so either unknown or like looked down upon. And I think just that's almost heartbreaking for me, you know, to 100%. Some degree, because I feel like as someone in Britain, when I participate in these things, I feel so much more connected to who I am and to also Nigeria, weirdly. But it's like, if I go to Nigeria with this information, I'll be completely disconnected, because no one's even on that level. And it's just like, you know, like, when you think about trying to make things better, like, how do you even begin to try and push for like change when people spiritually are still operating on such a, you know, a 100%. Different level?
Like,
can we talk about that?
the Tems situation with the, like, with that, the album cover and that video.
Oh, I didn't even know. What's
because basically it was, everyone was like, oh, this is clear, like, bring up your moja, you know, the spiritual, like, orishas, because of she's literally Black African woman on water in a sort of like white drapey, and that's literally your moja's like aesthetic. Like, anyone would know that that's why it was brought up. And then she's like, no, this is me like embodying like Christianity and my Jesus. And it's like, okay, but I'm sorry, when did Jesus empower Black women to be walking the walk? He was the only one that did that. No one else did that.
But do you know what?
The whole concept of Christianity is that you can't embody the Christian energy, while your moja, the rishis, is that actually, no, it's a connection where they are giving us each the power and energy, or especially an ancestral line of power and energy, to like, you know, be able to combat like the hardships of the world and like embrace joy and love and all this other thing, and like be a, like, for me, the Orishas is where it's like, it comes as all of human emotion and capacity and not just like you have to be the best because da da da, but you be good because this is how the exchange of love and care is happening in the world. Yeah. Like,
I think she gave that answer for those who are looking for a reason to believe.
Yeah,
it's Christianity. If you want to, you know what I mean? I wanted to go whole into the Arisha thing, but I don't know if it's it coming. You know what I mean?
I think that. It was definitely a shock when I went to Brazil as well. And, you know, I felt like I was in Nigeria because they spoke Yoruba. I ate akara on the streets and stuff like that. But it was very heavy on the Orisha and stuff like that. I did feel a bit of a disconnect because I was born in a Christian home and that was all I knew, and so it was just like, when it's like, I was just almost like, this is a taboo, take it away from me. But you're so right in terms of just having an understanding. It's just nice to even just know, you know. I might not subscribe to it, but the knowledge is totally eliminated from schools. We never thought about it. I didn't know. I knew it was a thing, but it was a forbidden thing. It wasn't things to talk about. So that's so interesting that
I agree.
That connection was put
there. It's also like, what's interesting, just quickly on Orishas, is like, they're also so part of nature. And that's when, like, you know, when you talk about indigenous cultures, like Nigerians, from what I see, a lot of times they're so disconnected to nature. And I think that's a part of it. The spiritual practice was so connected to nature, while Christianity is so removed from nature. And so Nigerians, because they're so heavily Christian.
It's also like, the capitalism, you know?
That as well.
Chasing the pound sometimes. It doesn't keep you close to, you know, the village and the customs and the traditions like, and everything. Stuff like that, you know? Which is why that, like, even the witch doctor is demonized. It's such a, you know, demonized symbol in Nigeria. And that's existed for, obviously, that's probably, like, one of the figureheads from traditional practice which has still stayed around, right? But it's just also so taboo, like, so thank you all so much for that chat. Now, can you share with our listeners where they can find you?
Absolutely. You can find me on mostly IG at Pelumi P-E-L-U-M-I .nubi N-U-B-I, and also on my website www.peluminubi.com. Love travel tips, hacks, and all things travel there.
Hi, Chloe Filani. You can find me on Instagram, 1.chloe.f.
Hi, I am Tribe, and you can find me on socials. That's tribe.official, tribe spelled T-R-Y-B, and I post all of my mixes and random sets and things like that on there, so go check it out.
Wait, first, can I just ask, what was that book that Pelumi recommended?
I believe it was Purple Hibiscus by Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie.
Okay, cool.
Purple. I haven't read it myself, but it's now on my list on Audible.
Yeah, the conversation between Rona and Pelumi like made it sound really appealing. I definitely want to check it out. Purple Hibiscus, cool. I remember that. Yeah, what I really loved, and it was not that I wasn't expecting it, but you know, like on the first episode, it was about Nigerian culture, and then you guys just talked almost exclusively about music. That was really cool. And then on this one, it's like Nigerian icons, and there was just so much chat about literature and writers. And I found that so inspiring and so cool, and also quite cool in a way. Like, I've read a couple of the books that was mentioned, and yeah, I don't know, not to say that society undervalues writers, but for them to be the icons that was brought up in the conversation, I thought was like very powerful.
I think maybe within Africa, Nigeria is definitely a hotspot for literature, and I'm not surprised as well, given the rich cultural storytelling within Nigeria, not just Yorubas but Igbos, and within Hausas as well. There's so much kind of long history of it, you know, and so being able to then translate that into literature, you know, it's not a hard kind of transition mentally that became one of the things that Nigeria is known for. And it's a commonality, I guess, between particularly Yoruba and Igbos. And it wasn't on purpose, but it's weird, you're right, that we all came up with an author or a particular book that stood out to us. I would say someone that I think I mentioned briefly, maybe on a different episode, but I had wished I had said, was Sade. She was someone who I wanted to put down as an icon, because not only is she still pretty much celebrated as a Nigerian British artist. And I say the artist within the band, but even knowing her story, for example, I believe that the label didn't want to really offer them much as a band when they first launched. And they were just kind of like, you know what, we will take a small cut out of every sale. And they were, and the label was like, fine, like, we're not expecting you to sell that much anyway, so it's probably not going to amount to much. And obviously they were majorly successful. And the cultural influence that Sade has, even as an icon herself and the band sonically, on R&B, and I'm bringing it back to music, I'm sorry, but alt-R&B right now. Yeah. Alt-R&B and neo-soul right now, it's weird. I think we slept on her in the late 90s and 2000s. Like, oh yeah, yeah, Sade. But the way she's re-emerged as a cultural icon today, and her influence, it's amazing. And I'll say the same thing about Jamiroquai, even though he's not Nigerian, but it's interesting that these kind of artists that were British, and particularly Sade, British Nigerian, that has now been a kind of global influence on R&B. It's amazing.
Mm, so much pride that I can hear. Yeah. Amazing. The other thing I kind of wanted to pause a minute on was the kind of, and maybe you can help me understand this a bit more, but in the discussion, I felt like there was a tension between being a feminist Nigerian woman, that there was something specific in being those two things at once.
Mm. I think what was pointed out is, and I agree as well, I don't know if it was Rona or Chloe who said it, that there's a, like, Nigerian women are quite a force. Just like within the family household and just in the way that we carry ourselves. And sometimes it's hard to see ourselves in the way that feminism has been portrayed and the way that people see feminism. And so when, what's her name? Chimamanda Adichie proclaimed herself as a feminist, I felt like it was bridging those worlds and reclaiming it in a way that I think for many Nigerian girls who might not have even come of age, or as they're coming of age, say, I can identify with that. There's many things that overlap. And I think that's quite powerful, where it's like the things that we already are can relate to the label and the word that also means, you know, equality, and that actually we have the right to claim this word for ourselves. And so, yeah, and the fact that even Beyonce taking that the piece excerpts from her book and then reading it and including it on her album as well, and also claiming that word for herself and using it as a way to claim that word for herself is amazing. That root, and it all comes into the intersectionality of feminism and the way that we, I guess, was it the second wave feminism needed to widen out and really see different ways in which feminism can exist. Mm. So I think authors like her have kind of been able to show that we can claim that word and actually take what Nigerian women have already been doing and really present it as being a part of it. Hope that answers your question.
Mm.
Yeah?
Yeah, definitely. I think, yeah, not to get too deep into it, because to turn it into a discussion about feminism, but like, I think as any ism, though the way one understands it is good and is a good thing, like, is there so many, it's so multifaceted and it's loaded as well, isn't it? So it does make sense. Cool. I had something that I wanted to kind of like, but I just want to check, like, we don't have to go into this, but there was something talked about, like, respectability policy and mistresses.
Yeah, I did pick up on that.
So many uncles have mistresses. Yeah.
Chloe brought it up, and I think one of the things, I don't know if it was a matter of, like, something that we hoped for.
Yeah, to get rid of respectability.
Yeah, exactly.
Politics, yeah.
That's it. I think on the surface level, there's so much traditions and cultural expectation and norms that people are expected to abide by. But underneath that, when you lift the lid, there's so much messiness and complex dynamics that are occurring that get swept underneath the rug. And I think maybe what Chloe was alluding to is if we just kind of were honest and open, and not restrict ourselves to these respectability politics, that we can let people just be a bit more and let people breathe a little bit more. And that would be good, not just for people's individual lives, their personal lives, but for the culture as well.
Yeah, definitely. Is respectability politics a phrase that I've just missed from life? It seems... Yeah, okay, cool, that's fine. I accept.
How would I best describe respectability politics?
I think it makes sense. I think every culture has its own version of what being respectable means.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in Chinese culture, there's probably like very specific things that I could talk about.
Yeah.
And then also like, yeah, all cultures. And it's just like, there's different flavors of it. But yeah, ultimately it's like, what does that serve? And does it become dogma and status quo? And how does that damage us
exactly
as individuals?
Exactly.
And do these things like evolve as fast as time?
So yeah, as Rona was pointing out, yeah, how true are these things? And it's true. If it's impacting people in a negative way, we need to be able to let go of some of these things and maybe come up with new paths that works better for the group or for those individuals.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Are you a Niger babe, know a Niger babe, or want to get to know one? If you've listened to the show and want to keep the conversation going, send us a message with your thoughts about the topic and we'll read out our favourite responses on the bonus episode at the end of this series. We'd love to hear from you.
Email info@thirdmagazine.co.uk. That's third with three I's. Or message us on the gram @thirdmagazine.
If you want to see some BTS, head to our TikTok where you can see what went down in the recording of this show.
You can also catch more from us on our website, thirdmagazine.co.uk.
If you're enjoying listening to us during this series, you might want to check out one of our earlier shows or mini-series. There's All My Half East Asian BFFs, where I chat with friends who share a white and East Asian mixed heritage.
And 20 single episodes to listen back to, covering rich topics such as dark tourism,
love and relationships,
cultural appropriation,
and cancel culture. And don't forget to help spread the word.
Spread the word!
Share the show with a friend.
Share the show.
A colleague. Your mum.
Definitely your mum.
Or just rate and review us wherever you're listening.
Yeah, 5 stars only. Thank you. All of the music you've been hearing on this episode is by the versatile Afro-electronic DJ and producer Sensi Lo. You can connect with her on Instagram at senseilo.